From Washington, D.C., the National Broadcasting Company presents the National Radio Forum, arranged by the Washington Evening Star. The forum features each week an outstanding figure in the affairs of our government, speaking on a subject of current countrywide interest. The distinguished forum guest tonight will be introduced by Mr. Newbold Noyes, Associate Editor of the Star. Mr. Noyes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. In the past 7 years, our country has spent billions of dollars for relief. But the fundamental problem of relief remains unsolved. The annual appropriations continue to remain in the category of first aid treatment, temporary palliatives, and little progress has been made in devising a course of treatment that would lead to cure. Senator James F. Burns of South Carolina is one of the best informed members of Congress on the country's kindred problems of relief and unemployment. As a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, he has followed closely the various programs through which the government has been attempting to meet the appalling situation in which the jobless have found themselves. A year ago, the senator became the chairman of a special Senate committee on unemployment, which has devoted deep study to the problems of the unemployed and to all possible remedial legislation. Senator Burns, who is our forum speaker this evening, proposes to outline for us the purposes of legislation which he is sponsoring in Congress, designed to combine federal agencies dealing with relief and, through proper centralization and consolidation, work toward a permanent organization dealing with relief problem as a whole. This legislation proposes a broadening of the Social Security program, federal and state cooperation, and a unified public works agency which would augment the work of the Social Security Board. Senator Burns is applying to this difficult economic issue a legislative knowledge gained from 22 years in both branches of Congress, 14 years in the House and 8 years in the Senate. He brings to the task also a natural ability to map details as well as broad basic principles. It is with great pleasure that I present to you now Senator James F. Burns of South Carolina.
It is my opinion that under our form of government, we must continue to look to private enterprise to provide jobs and look to government for assistance only to the extent that private industry is unable to provide employment. The surest way to relieve unemployment is to inspire you with the hope that you can invest money in a business providing jobs with a reasonable hope of earning a profit, and that you will be permitted by governments, federal and state, to retain a reasonable amount of the profits you earn. Time does not permit me to discuss what government should do or undo in order to furnish that inspiration. Such a discussion would make it impossible to comply with the request to explain the provisions of a bill which I have introduced, amending provisions of the Social Security Act and creating a Department of Public Works. That bill has to do not with the causes of unemployment, nor the encouragement that might be given to individual employers, but with the methods by which government shall aid those who are unable to secure employment in private enterprise. Unemployment is our most serious domestic problem. It is a national problem, a permanent problem. Whether you approve or disapprove of what has been done by federal and local governments during recent years, you may as well realize that an overwhelming majority of the people of this country believe that the granting of assistance to those in need is a public duty and primarily the duty of the federal government. We cannot ignore the problem. Idle men not only do not produce, they do not consume. Their failure to buy because of the lack of wages results in the unemployment of other men who would normally produce the goods they would consume. As unemployment increases, the national income decreases. As the national income decreases, the revenues of government decrease. Some persons ask how these millions of people who are today the recipients of government assistance got along before that assistance was rendered by governments. In many instances, they just did not get along. When they exhausted their savings, those who were unable to secure assistance became shipwrecks upon the sea of life. When no one came to their rescue, they were simply sunk. Some were rescued. The young worker out of employment as he looked for a job drew upon his savings until they were exhausted. Then he gave up his home and the little family either went to the home of the parents of husband or wife, or to the home of some other relative or friend. Those who had no relatives or friends willing to share their homes and food were helped by charitable organizations and churches. They did not try to live as you live. They fought merely to exist. Unemployment assistance by government is not a new question. As early as 1894, ex-President Benjamin Harrison demanded that the federal government set up a work program to fight unemployment. In 1921, at the instance of Mr. Hoover, then Secretary of Commerce, the Conference on Unemployment was held in Washington. Bills were introduced in the Congress, but nothing was accomplished. Improved business conditions lessened the demand for federal legislation, but from time to time during the years that followed, bills were on the subject were introduced in the Congress. In 1929, our so-called boom year, the national income was $80 billion, and yet we had 3 million unemployed. With that national income today, the number of unemployed would be greater than in 29 because of the technological changes. And the levying of a payroll tax tends to encourage these changes because the tax levied is upon workers and not upon machines. You can gather some idea of the extent of our relief efforts from the fact that in the calendar year 1937, federal and local governments spent for public works and relief grants of various kinds, excluding loans, the sum of $4.3 billion. During 1938, the expenditure was greater. This sum was in excess of the total expenditures of the United States government for all purposes in any year during peacetime prior to 1925. This vast sum has been spent through the WPA and the PWA, RFC and the CCC, the FHA, the NYA, and all the other alphabetical agencies created at different times and with different objectives. The emergency required that they be created hurriedly, without relation to other agencies. There was no opportunity to view the whole picture and coordinate the emergency efforts. But that time has now come, the time to consider the whole question and standardize and coordinate the methods of assistance. We should look first to unemployment insurance, second to public assistance, and third to public works. Unemployment insurance is a shock absorber. To date, we have not had an opportunity to fully test its effectiveness, but we have had opportunity to discover the weaknesses of the existing system. The laws of the states vary. In all states, there has been too much delay in the worker receiving his compensation benefits. In some cases, he is given up in disgust. In other cases, the worker at the end of a long period of waiting received a check for $3 or $4 or some other sum so inadequate that he immediately made application for a job on a WPA project. The bill I have introduced has for its objective the payment of more liberal benefits and the simplification of the law. It provides for payment of benefits equal to 50% of his weekly earnings and for a minimum payment of $5 per week. Reduces to 1 week the period a man must wait for his benefits, provides that if he is eligible, he will receive payments for at least 13 weeks if he continues unemployed for that long, and by simplifying the method of determining eligibility, avoids delay in making payments to workers and lessens the burden of reports by employers. Now let us see the effect of these changes. Of the 52 million gainfully employed people of the country, 27 million are now covered by this system. The only large groups not covered are the agricultural workers, the domestic workers, and those employed in establishments having less than 8 employees. Approximately 80% of the industrial workers are covered. Therefore, if there is a recession in business, 80% of the industrial workers who lose their jobs will after 1 week receive compensation benefits. Because of the increased benefits promptly paid, they will not be trying to get on the relief rolls. It will improve the morale of the individual. The worker feels he is entitled to unemployment compensation as a matter of right because of his contribution through the payroll tax. He prefers it to registering for relief. Relief means being subjected to investigation by social workers to determine his need. And once he has been placed upon the rolls, being the object of the jokes of people who rejoice in ridiculing WPA workers. Today we have an employment service, while in many states it is in the same office with the Unemployment Insurance Bureau. The employment service is under the Labor Department, and the Unemployment Insurance Bureau is under the Social Security Board. Employees in these local offices receive funds from the two different departments and from the states. The department that supplies the funds insists upon the right to issue regulations to control expenditures. Because no man can serve three masters, the local official has a difficult time accounting to state officials and then to two departments in Washington. I want these services consolidated in the states and consolidated in Washington. I want the workers to have an opportunity to walk in a door, file a claim for insurance, and in the same office, register for a job giving a statement of his work experience and the name of his employer. I want that official to get busy finding a job for the worker. Through the same office, the worker should apply for a job on public works when his benefits are exhausted and no private job is available. I have provided that the employment service be transferred to the Social Security Board because that board administers unemployment compensation. However, as long as the two services are united, I do not care in what department the consolidated service is placed, provided it is placed where it will command the confidence of employers. If an employment service does not command the confidence of employers, it cannot be of service to the man without a job. The necessity for a minimum payment per week is that when a man does receive compensation benefits, he should receive enough to remove him from the ranks of those seeking relief. The increase in the payments out of that particular fund is more than justified by the reduction it will permit in the cost of work projects where the annual average expenditure is $1,000 per man. That fund has a reserve collected before payments commence. As long as the payments do not exceed the amounts collected each year, the increase is wise. It is better to pay to the unemployed worker a more liberal allowance out of this fund, already collected from the people, than to pay so small an amount that he refuses to accept it and goes to a work project for which additional taxes must be levied or additional money borrowed to be ultimately paid by taxes. We should either make it of service to the worker or abolish it and provide jobs for all unemployed. The bill provides for more liberal payments to the aged. Payments now made by states run from $35 to $7.50 per month. It is useless for the federal government to tell some of the states that it will pay one half of $30 if the state pays that much for old age assistance. We might just as well offer to pay one half of $100 per month. Many of the states simply have no means of raising revenue to make such payments. The federal government has usurped the field of taxation. Local governments rely chiefly upon taxes upon real estate. It's poor judgment to lend money to a young worker to build a home and at the same time force state governments to levy such high taxes upon real estate that the man cannot keep his home. To remedy this, the bill provides that in a state where the per capita income is less than the average per capita income of the United States, that the contribution by that state shall be reduced by the percentage by which its per capita income is less than the average income. In return for this, it is provided that the average amount paid by a state, including its contribution from the federal government, shall be not less than $15 per month. Payments to dependent children are likewise increased with the same provision as to the financially weak states. Through this provision for dependent children, mothers are cared for and are removed from the list of those who now seek relief employment. The old age insurance benefits, which under the existing law would be first paid in 1942, would be paid in 1940. To the credit of this fund, there is in the Treasury at least $1 billion. It is collected from a payroll tax, a deflationary tax. Payments are made earlier, the increased purchasing power will lessen this deflationary influence. At the same time, if we make it possible for a man of 65 to retire, we provide a job for a younger man. I have provided for a new category of grants to the states where a state provides assistance for handicapped persons who, because of mental or physical disability, cannot secure employment in private enterprise or on public works. The federal government would match on a 50-50 basis such expenditures by a state. In every state there are persons who are not sick enough to be entitled to hospitalization by a state, but who are not well enough to do efficient work. They just cannot get a job and cannot get assistance. The fact that the states must put up 50% of the payments provides a break against abuse of the system. Because it is restricted to the handicapped, it does not place the federal government in the position of contributing to general relief. There is no reason why the employment service functioning in the same organization with unemployment compensation should not advise Washington at least once a week of the number of unemployed in the state. Congress and the people will then know each week the number of unemployed in the nation, with the exception of the unemployed domestic workers and the agricultural workers. If in a particular section an increase in unemployment is noted for several weeks, government should come to the rescue of that section with public work projects. I provide for a public works department. The establishment of such a department was urged last year by President Roosevelt, and from time to time has been urged by leaders of both political parties. By advanced planning, that department should have on hand approved plans for federal projects and non-federal projects. When in a particular section it appeared that unemployment was increasing, it could give the order to start work upon projects in that section. Prompt action may prevent a general recession of business. If the recession spreads, then the public work program should spread. The department could have a division in control of heavy construction, contract work, and a division for work which can be better and more quickly handled by force account. That question of organization must be left to the administrator. But our public works will be controlled in one department and not scattered all over the lot as at present. Today, when the official of a state or city comes to Washington, he goes to the Treasury Department, to the Public Buildings Division. There, the government puts up 100% for a post office or a courthouse. If he doesn't get the courthouse, the official can take a taxi cab to the Bureau of Public Roads and try to secure funds for a cement highway. Their projects are financed on a 50-50 basis. From there, he can take a taxi to PWA to seek funds for a schoolhouse, and he is asked to put up 55% and get a grant of 45%. Then he can go over to WPA, and whatever he did not get elsewhere, he can apply for there, where the average contribution is 17% and the federal government puts up 83%. My bill provides that they shall all be placed in one department. I want to stop competition for projects by government departments and stop shopping for government funds by local officials. Today, a local official will file with PWA an application in which his government agrees to put up 55% of the cost of the project. And on the same day, he will advise WPA that his county or city cannot put up more than the average of 17% required by WPA. Under the proposed plan, this official will have to present his request for public works to one department and will have difficulty in reconciling such varying statements. Heretofore, when an appropriation has been made for public works, Congress has not legislated as to how it should be allotted as between states. That has been left to the discretion of the administrators. I believe that the time has come for Congress to say how it shall be allotted. Appropriations for public roads are by law allotted to states upon a formula having three factors: population, area, and highway mileage. It has worked so satisfactorily that the subject is seldom discussed and the formula is known to few people. It is done mathematically and is removed from political pressure. In the absence of a specific formula in the law, PWA bases its allotment to states upon population and the number of persons in need of employment as determined by WPA. WPA determines the number in need by the number certified by local agencies, the number receiving direct relief, general conditions, and the recommendations of state administrators. Officials of that organization believe it desirable that the law should provide a formula. Now, the establishment of any formula is a difficult proposal. I provide that the appropriations shall be allotted to the states on the basis of population and the number of unemployed as determined by the Census Department and by the report of the Unemployment Service, which, working in connection with the Unemployment Compensation Bureau, should hereafter be able to give us fairly accurate figures. It will not be exact, but it will be a great improvement. One objection urged against such a department is that it will provide for another member of the cabinet. While I do not think it so all-important whether the organization be called a bureau with an administrator or a department with a secretary at its head, I do not share the fear about there being another member of the president's cabinet. In this bill, there is no mention of a cabinet. In no act of Congress is there a mention of a cabinet. The president can select whom he pleases as members of his cabinet. I think it was President Harding who first invited the vice president to be a member of the president's cabinet. Last year, President Roosevelt made the director of WPA a member of his cabinet. Therefore, for a year, we have had as members of the cabinet the head of WPA and the head of PWA. If any person objects to a Department of Public Works because it would mean another member of the cabinet, he should at least agree that when WPA and PWA are combined, in this respect, it will be only half as objectionable as it has been heretofore. This is a statement of the purposes sought to be accomplished by the bill I have introduced. Because it affects the work of a number of departments, it is certain to arouse opposition. The officials of a government department are just like all other human beings. Once granted power, they, as a rule, are opposed to any proposal that would possibly lessen their power or decrease their income. They fear any change. This is not true, of course, of all officials. There are many patriotic public servants who forget selfish interests and consider only the welfare of the individual for whose benefit the organization is established. But in this matter, I know the assistance of pressure groups will be sought. For the opposition, various reasons will be assigned. Before you concur in such opposition, make certain that it is based upon the welfare of those we seek to serve and not upon the fears of men who hold desirable appointments that they will lose power or pay. It is not the purpose of this bill to help government officials. Its purpose is to help the American worker and the American taxpayer. The vast majority of people make no effort to present their views to legislators. The pressure groups and the office holders never fail to do so. However, for my long service in the Congress, I believe that the people share the views expressed by that great American champ Clark when he made the statement which was later inscribed upon his tombstone. No man is fit to be a lawgiver for a mighty people who yields to the dictates and solicitations of the few who have access to his air and is unmindful of the great multitude who may never hear his voice or look upon his face.
You just heard an address by the Honorable James F. Burns, United States Senator from the state of South Carolina, who spoke to you on the subject, the problem of the unemployed.